Hi, I'm Bob Wells, and I'd like to welcome you to the Get Real Show, sponsored by Keystone Partners Group, the show that strips away the myth and the mystery surrounding success in the real estate industry. And today I'm very excited to have a special guest with me. His name is Jim Chrisman. Jim, it's exciting to have you on the show today.
Bob, thank you very much.
Yeah, Jim, I've been looking forward to our show, particularly because not only have you been very successful in real estate as your own owner of companies before, also as a team agent and also in a small market. Mm-hmm. And actually you've been recognized on a national level mm-hmm. for dominance in your market. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I'm really excited to talk with you about today.
Great.
So
great.
Me I know too. How busy you are.
Glad yes, thank you.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your business. You're in a small market right in Palmerton, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we're a small town, Palmerton, which is about 5,000-6,000 people. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a small county. We only have about 58,000 people in the whole county, Carbon County. And it's sort of a bedroom community type county. There's really no big major industry. Mm-hmm. Our two major industries is a company up Kovach that builds fire trucks. Mm-hmm. And Pentella Data. Some people have heard of the parent company is called Pencor. They're a pretty big regional player in internet services. Mm-hmm. And other than that, that's really about it. We have a small town up north, 12 miles north of Palmerton, Jim Thorpe, which is a tourist-type town. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have heard of it. Very quaint, shoppy-type thing. Yeah. And we're known for that. We're known for Blue Mountain Ski Area, which last I checked is the highest elevation ski area in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And very well known, expanding right now. And that's about it.
You've done exceptionally well in that small location.
Yeah, yeah. Palmerton's a unique little town. It's sort of Norman Rockwellian type town. Mm-hmm. We actually have one of the largest public pools in the state also, right in Palmerton.
A little trivia
so,
there.
Yeah, I take clients by there all the time. It draws them in.
So tell me about the composition of your team and kind of maybe what you your production in 2015, what that was, and then again what you're projecting for 2016.
Okay. Yeah, I have on my team, I have five members, mm-hmm. including myself. I have two administrators and a buyer agent, straight up buyer agent. It's all she does is work with buyers. Mm-hmm. And my son Jake is a showing assistant for my buyer agent and also is a listing manager. So he's got a kind of a hybrid role. Mm-hmm. And so he helps me with the listing side, which is what I do. And also is out showing houses to quite a few people.
Okay. And 2015 units and volume? What?
2015 was, we hit 91 units, I believe, for about $16 million. Mm-hmm. And then this year we're looking at hoping to hit 110 and about $21, $22
million. 110 transactions,
yes,
21 transactions. To $22 million in gross mm-hmm. sales volume.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah. We're happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Never enough, but we're working on. We'll keep jacking it up.
Now, I understand that you have been very entrepreneurial, basically your whole real estate career.
Yeah.
What did you do before real estate?
Well, not a whole lot because I started, you know, real estate when I was 22.
Oh, okay. Wow. Yeah.
So I've been doing this for 26 years.
Was that associated with family in any way or?
Not at all.
Okay.
No. I read a The way I got into real estate is I started to read after high school. Mm-hmm. I didn't do much during
Sounds
school
familiar.
At all. I wasn't really interested, to be honest mm-hmm. with you. Kind of ADHD, if they didn't have it back then, but I was a
sure.
poster boy for that. And but you know, once you go out in the world, and you need to provide for yourself. You get a little smarter. And I read that real estate was the highest legal source of income in the world.
Hmm.
So it attracted me to
it's
taking classes. Yeah, yeah. So I
remember what that book was.
I don't.
General
I
reading?
Think it might have been an article. Yeah, I can't remember. To be
mm-hmm.
honest with you.
Interesting.
But that's what attracted me to it originally mm-hmm. because I didn't know what else to do. I was taking doing business courses for a business management degree in college, delivering pizzas at the same time to make ends meet because we really didn't have any money growing up and. You know, that's when I went into real estate school.
Yeah. So how did the beginning of your real estate career pan out? What did that look like?
Well, the way I started was during the taking the courses, they had a career night with a bunch of real estate companies. And I connected with someone there that owned a real estate company, which was an independent company, but a large regional player.
Okay.
And believed in what he had to say, and they had very good training, and it was a very good way for me to start. Mm-hmm. And I was there for about 2 years.
Now, was that training all the people from the inside of that one office training inside the office, or were there other regional trainers that were involved in that too?
No, it was just the owners of the company, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The guy that started it and his son.
Right.
And the guy that started it was a teacher and quit teaching to go into real estate back in the early 70s.
Right.
And just was very good at it.
Brought
very,
that very teaching acumen
absolutely.
To that environment.
A great teacher.
Yeah.
I remember being that. It was during the beginning of the downturn of the market in 1990. I was licensed January 1990.
Okay.
And it started to go down. There were still 36 people in the class the very first class he taught in that class. And I was the only one that was there a year later because the market just went phew.
So what were you doing at that time that allowed you to continue when a lot of other people didn't?
Honestly, I just did what they told me to do.
Mm-hmm. Which was?
Go out and talk to people.
Talk to people.
Yeah. Hit expireds, FSBOs, and talk to friends, family. Mm-hmm. And they were the hardest people to get any business from at all for many years.
They know you don't know what
exactly. They knew how I grew up, so they knew way too much.
You have to rebrand yourself. Right?
And I just think they really didn't think I'd stick around for very long, so I couldn't blame them.
Yeah,
that would have been a logical conclusion looking into the future there, but
so was
maybe that was part of it, prove them wrong.
Was there something you were doing back there that gave you the personal power to continue? Did you have support
honestly,
outside the office?
Or? Well, like I said, I had very good training, so my skill set got better the more I tried.
Mm-hmm.
I failed a lot, and just had to get through it. And then actually, Tony Robbins was a pretty young man back then, and I listened to some of his philosophies and read some books and got some tapes. Yeah. It was cassettes back then.
Sure.
And,
personal power?
Yeah, personal power.
A lot of us have those still
absolutely.
On our shelves today.
Yeah,
right?
I still have it. And and that helped me through.
Yeah. So how did your business start to evolve? Where early 90s, you were in a kind of tougher market. When did you start to see a shift in your thinking from just sales to, wow, maybe I can expand this a little bit?
Honestly, for 3 years, I thought I would never make it, and I hated it. I hated the business.
It's a long time.
I did. Yeah, it really was. It was, and then at the beginning of the fourth year, I don't know, something just started clicking where I still probably didn't like it that much, but I started to make some decent money.
Mm-hmm.
And, just grew exponentially by then. And back then, I mean, I had no access to, I was with only 2 years with the first company. Then I was 3 years. I was with another very tiny independent company that was located closer to home.
Right.
And nobody knew anything about team building back then. But somehow I figured out I needed somebody to do the paperwork, which is what I was terrible at. So I hired my first administrator, who actually ended up being with me for 20 years. I hired her in 1994. So about my fourth year in the business, and then she was with me that whole time.
That's amazing.
Yeah,
in a time where many agents find it difficult to have administrators that are long term.
Nobody
years
knew
is an
what
extraordinary.
We called them assistants back then.
Yeah,
and nobody really knew what that was.
Yeah.
But I was the first one in a pretty large geographical area to have one for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You were probably one of the first guys to have a cell phone, too, I'm
betting. Yeah. The old bag phone. Yeah.
The bag 50, phone.
50-pound bag phone.
Thing.
Absolutely. And the battery lasted about 30 minutes.
I might have been the only person you could have called back then for a while. I had one, too.
Yeah.
So you had your own company eventually.
Mm-hmm.
When did that happen? When did you start thinking, wow, I can have my own shingle?
It would have been about 1994, yeah.
Okay.
I had my own independent company. The company, I probably would have stayed with the company I was with for a long time, a much longer period of time, but I was owned by a husband and wife, and they divorced, and the better half left.
Mm.
So I was out of there at that point. It was just too It was just not a good working environment.
Now, do you find in markets, and I guess you could only speak for your own, but is there a higher concentration of kind of smaller independents than the bigger national brands?
Yeah, I guess so. But on a per capita population basis, I don't know that it's any less.
Any different?
Yeah, because there's always been franchises in our area.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you opened your company, what was your vision? What was your mission? What were you thinking you wanted to do with that?
Honestly, that was so sudden to do that. There was no other company I really saw myself being at the time. So I was kind of thrust into it. So I had no real plan.
Right.
Except so that I think I can
I've got
to
go somewhere and I've got no options except my own.
Yeah, I had the training and I felt I could train others to a certain level. Mm-hmm. And hopefully they'd be able to fly on their own after a period of time. And, I had some real good agents that we produced out of the office, some that compete with me now and own their own companies.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thrust into it. So as far as a vision, mission, it wasn't really there. Just drive. That's all it was.
And you had Jim Chrisman Realty for how long?
Well, actually, I did a franchise for 5 years.
Okay.
Small, not very well-known franchise for 5 years. And I got some structure out of it, as far as company's concerned. So I'll always be grateful there. But, at the end of 5 years, people were still calling in and saying, is this Chrisman's Realty?
Right.
And different things like that. And I thought, why pay the fees if people are looking for me anyway?
Yeah.
So that's when I went on my own.
Yeah, when you joined that company and you were with them for 5 years, what were you hoping to find with that company?
I just wanted structure because although I had business classes, I never really ran a business before.
Right.
I mean, I had basically two jobs since high school. And one was delivering pizza and the other was working in a warehouse, in summers to make ends meet. So, that's the only job experience I had and had no business experience whatsoever.
So what were you hoping in terms of structure that would be delivered?
Just a structure that,
like financial for
the accounting part of it. I honestly wasn't even looking for what I should have been looking for. I had no idea what I was doing and would make the same decision, as I had more experience. But it was useful to a certain degree, so I'm always happy that I did it.
Yeah. And I remember that, just a little background for our audience. Jim is a business center, basically a business center in the same location as your original company, right?
Well, I pretty much, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I had a little tiny office we rented for less than a year.
But you're pretty much in the same general location.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you can hit it with a rock from one office to the other now.
Yeah.
So, but I got myself right on the main business district and bought a building way back when and worked out.
Back in 2009, Keystone Partners Group acquired the Stroudsburg Market Center, which is the primary location that is basically the hub for your office in Palmerton.
Right.
And I guess when was it that the leadership of the Stroudsburg Market Center started to speak with you?
Well, I don't know because the way it worked out for me is I had some after owning my own company for a long time, I didn't focus on much else besides my wife and my kids and my business. Mm-hmm. And my health really was not very good at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had some serious health concerns and I just started getting the feeling I needed to take a step back and take more of my time back because, besides my family, 100% of my time was spent on that business.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just started thinking, I really don't want to do this for a much longer period of time because it was just, when you own your own independent brokerage that's small, you have to sell, you have to train, and you have to manage the office, pay the bills, and all that, have employees and all that stuff. And I just didn't want to do that.
A lot of balls in the air.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And so what I found is you really can't do any one of them really great if you're so diversified and spread out that way. And I was just working myself to death, really, is what I was doing.
And I could appreciate that. Sometimes, we find ourselves working so hard to generate income, and then we end up giving away all of our income to take care of our health that we gave away in the process.
Yeah, I mean, it's small. As an independent broker, I mean, a lot of my commissions that I made were being were put toward the office bills. Mm-hmm. The agents that I had were, you know, we had some great agents through there, but there wasn't enough there left over on the brokerage side to pay the bills.
Right, so just not profitable.
It didn't make any sense.
Why continue
after a long
on that
period
path?
Of time. Sure. Yeah, and with all the headaches. Yeah. So, but the way I found KPG and KW was just having a transaction with an agent. I think you know Faith Brennison.
Oh yeah, sure. Yeah,
and she's just
used to be on my team.
Yeah,
long
really?
Ago.
Okay,
yeah, now she's a mega agent.
And the funny thing is, she never said, you know, hey, why don't you talk to me about the business. Never said anything like that. I asked her.
Mm-hmm.
She's just a very nice person to deal with.
Yeah.
And I just said, hey, so what? Tell me about this KW thing. And she just said, you know, I'm kind of busy right now. Do you mind if I have somebody give you a call? And Sean Morrow called me, and that's where it started. So maybe 4 months, 5 months later, I was signed up.
So it's curious because you'd already kind of had an experience with a larger national franchise,
right,
which probably left you kind of thinking, I don't know if I want to do that again. And now you're having another conversation. But what was on your list of criteria this time? What were you looking for that was important
for you? Well, like I said, I mean, it's so different from the first time I had a franchise. When I knew nothing, I felt I knew a good amount after 20-some years in the business that I knew what I was looking for. Mm-hmm. And I actually, when I had my health concerns, I actually spent a good 4 to 5 months examining every national company.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I think there was 6 in there, and some were eliminated pretty quickly. But Keller Williams just came up time and time again as being my front runner, you know, for various reasons. And when I had a transaction with Faith as a KW agent, that's when I asked. So, and the more I looked into it, the better it was.
What was that due diligence process like? Because obviously you didn't make a decision quickly.
No.
This one had to be right.
I wanted to know what the culture of the company was, of course, what the compensation was. And although that wasn't my number one thing at all, getting the best cut is not the only thing to look at for sure.
Right.
But you know, it was just a combination of everything that I was looking for, and it was really far and away number one.
You travel a little bit to take a look at the company?
I did. I went to company headquarters in Austin, Texas. I went to one of their 2 major conventions they have called Mega Camp.
Mm-hmm.
That same year before I joined, you guys hooked me up really nice for that.
Yeah, I remember seeing you there.
And I just had, you know, it's not a rah-rah thing at all. I mean, Gary Keller, watching him talk, he's just so, not soft-spoken, but he's just, this is the way it is. But in a very nice way, you can tell he's a very smart guy.
Brilliant.
Yeah, he is. And just the people that I just met, that I broke bread with and everything, I just had such a good time. You know, nobody was trying anything except to have a good time and learn. So it was really great. Great experience.
Yeah, glad to hear that.
And since then, I've had all my team members there. And you know, it's just, we just got back from last week, actually.
Yeah, it was just recently.
Yep. So
So tell me, when you decided to make that transition and you moved to KW and Keystone Partners Group, what was your growth curve after that? How did things maybe change or evolve for you from the time that you joined Keystone Partners Group to today?
Well, to be completely honest, it was quite an adjustment for 6 to 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I probably made a few mistakes there in the rollout, but in really keeping up with my own clients. I have, you know, a fairly good sized list of clients. And but once we got into the models and just following the models primarily is the main thing, everything just started kicking in, and that's when production really, really went up, and I was a lot happier.
Did it take you a little while to buy into the models? Or did you just kind of...
Yeah, because, I mean, you do your own thing for so many years. It's hard to break habits sometimes. In fact, I lost my 20-year administrator out of the process because, you know, that position is a position that type of person normally doesn't want to change that much. And mm-hmm. that's where we ran into some issues there. And it was just a mutual separation that made sense mm-hmm. at the time. So since then, I've had a few since then, and I think we have a really good one right now.
So what is your volume? How has your volume changed year over year between the time that you joined KW and today? I'm just curious.
It's been greater than 20. After that first year, it's been greater than 20% every year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I mean, it's just my profitability is even much greater than that. I'm just talking about gross volume.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My profitability is much greater than that.
Which is what matters, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, there's really so much conversation about, I sell so much. And at the end of the day, sometimes you say, how much you actually keep,
right.
which is a far more important number than how much you earn gross. Mm-hmm. And so what's your relationship with financials? How do you feel about keeping your expenses accountable for results?
Well, we follow the Red Book completely, The Millionaire Real Estate Agent. I think it's probably the greatest real estate book ever written. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's a chapter in there called Red Light, Green Light.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're considering an expense and you have the money to pay for it and you think it'll grow your business, mm-hmm. that's the green light.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have it, you don't spend it, mm-hmm. that's the red light.
Right.
So follow that philosophy, and it really does fall into place pretty well.
And if you spend the money and it doesn't give you the results you're looking for, red light again.
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's out of there. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. What kind of books do you like to read? What do you read to kind of keep sharp?
Business books,
Any favorites?
Self-help. Unleash the Power Within was a great book early on.
Mm-hmm.
The Red Book, like I said. Robert Kiyosaki books. I've read most of those.
And those are wealth
real
building?
Real estate, wealth building books. Yeah.
We're actually, wealth building through real estate in many cases.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, there was a book by a guy named Dave Del Dotto many years ago. Have you ever heard that name before?
Yeah, I have. Wasn't he a TV commercial guy?
He was a TV commercial guy. And
Real estate investing.
Yeah, I learned some things from that. Carlton Sheets, I've read a little bit because mm-hmm. I feel you should invest in real estate if you're going to sell it.
Sure.
You know, and have multiple.
When did you start thinking about investing in real estate?
I actually bought my first house before I became a realtor, shortly before I became a realtor, and which ended up being an investment. I kept it when I bought my second house. I kept my first house as a rental
mm-hmm.
for several years. And then sold it and moved on, which ended up making a nice profit.
Mm-hmm.
And ever since then, I've bought and sold real estate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just look for the right deal at the right time. Mm-hmm. Most of them get passed on to my clients, but once in a while, if I'm in the buying mode and mm-hmm. things look right, the green light's there, we go with it.
Are you more of a fix and flip kind of guy or a buy and hold?
Mostly a buy and hold. I haven't flipped too many properties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've held on to some for quite a while.
Are you continuing to add properties all the time? Or?
Here and there. Nothing really focused. I don't have a set number that I'm looking for or anything like that. So we have one commercial that does very well. So that's been my flagship investment property that we've kept, and we haven't really acquired anything lately.
Mm-hmm. Not too long ago, you mentioned that your business at one point was affecting your health adversely,
mm-hmm.
and I think that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
And you're a different guy.
Yeah.
Today you walked in the door actually, and I hadn't even since the last time I've seen you, which is a couple of months. You look great.
Thank you.
So how does that impact your business? How does it impact your ability to get stuff done?
It's amazing because my health problems really affected my sleep, so I had major sleep issues that are pretty well gone now. And,
mm-hmm.
and lucky for me, I'm a guy, I 5 hours sleep is enough for me mm-hmm. to really, be productive at my highest level. So I generally, now with everything being corrected, I can get up very early, get my workouts in, and still get to work pretty early and be productive the whole day.
Well,
so
what was your weight at your heaviest? What is it now? Just curious. If that's too real, let me know.
No, I was my all-time heaviest was 278.
Wow, 278.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you now?
I'm about 192.
Wow, congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's an amazing accomplishment.
Thank you.
And I had a few pounds heavier myself, and I certainly realized that my energy level, my ability to actually stay focused and have enthusiasm and passion.
Yes, fun, absolutely.
So much different.
Yeah, you're miserable when you're that heavy. I was.
You know, since it's directly related to business, some people are probably interested. What did you do? I mean,
honestly,
how did you make that happen?
Honestly, just help correct some of the sleeping issues and... you know, with a lot of various different things and, you know, just started
exercise or eating?
And eating better and high protein diet, multiple meals a day.
Mm-hmm.
I eat 5-6 times a day, generally.
Smaller meals
mm-hmm. every 2 to 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Some protein in there and I work out mm-hmm. in the mornings.
What kind of workouts do you do?
All kinds, cross training, lifting, just cardio.
To mix it up.
Tabata classes, whatever's available. And even yoga, I do some yoga, and that's really helped with flexibility and injury prevention.
Awesome. I'm curious to learn more, Jim, about some of the mistakes that you've made along the way. So maybe we can introduce those mistakes to other people.
How much time do you have here?
We got a couple hours. But tell me some of the things that maybe from a production perspective or a lead generation perspective that you did that you thought were a good idea at the time and just didn't work out that way.
One that I spent a lot of money on because that second independent broker I worked with did a lot of postcards over the years.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, they had some effect, but for the investment really wasn't a good return. For sure. So we scrapped all that.
What kind
over
of
the years?
What did that look like?
In terms
how often were you sending them and many people? Any idea?
It was at one time, in our heyday with that program, we had sent out thousands every month.
Mm-hmm.
So I was spending probably $24,000-$25,000 mm-hmm. a year to do that.
Wow.
And yes, we did get some sales out of it, and maybe it paid for itself some years, but even though, you're not really looking to make an investment to break even, you're looking to make a profit from that investment. So even if it did, it wasn't, I think a lot of realtors make that mistake. You know, they say, well, if I spend X amount of dollars, it's costing me this much a year. If I get one sale or two sales, it'll pay for it. Well, not really after taxes and everything else.
Yeah.
It really isn't going to do that.
And there's the opportunity cost of putting so much energy into something that's not profitable.
And even if it does after tax pay for it, is that what you want to do, break even on your investments? Or do you, would you buy a real piece of real estate for that way if you're just breaking even? I hope not.
So what kind of return would you like to see? If you're going to spend some money in your business, what do you hope to see?
Generally, we like to see, a 20% plus return on whatever we invest,
mm-hmm.
marketing wise.
Yeah.
So, that's a healthy number that makes sense and pays you for your time to do it.
Sure. And what other kind of mistakes have you made in real estate? I wish I could turn the clock back on that one.
As an independent broker, I made the mistake of taking on the wrong type of agent.
Mm-hmm.
Subsequently having to fire them or, them quitting and trying to sabotage the business. And things like that, hiring the wrong people on my team. I've done that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pretty lucky with that, but I've had a few doozies.
Give me an example of that one. You don't name the person, but
no.
What about the process maybe did you skip that might have saved you from making that mistake?
Yeah, probably, I hired out more out of need at the time than out of following the model and the program 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I would have done that, I would have figured out that this person really isn't a fit. And so, 9 months later, out of my life, in frustration, she had to go. And that, you know, just it just got worse. So, but I should never hired that person to begin with. And even after making the mistake, it should have ended within 90 days, and it didn't.
Mm-hmm. What part of the hiring process did you leave out? Sorry. Is there a part that you can remember that you say, "Wow, I should have done that part, but didn't"?
Probably one or two extra interviews. Mm-hmm. Really digging deeper, because she honestly fit the profile.
Sure.
Pretty much.
Behaviorally.
You know, behaviorally, she was an 82 or 83% match, I think it was, mm-hmm. which is pretty good and acceptable generally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we did a lot of it, but just, you know, do it all the way. Do it all the way. I know it sucks because at the time you may be really busy and you have to, you know, you have a makeshift environment getting everything done that needs to be done, but it's worth it because if you get the right person.
Sure. Were you doing mutual expectations interviews back then or reference checks?
Yeah. We did some of that. We just didn't do enough of it with this particular sheet. You know, some people have a way of snowing you a little bit. And that's what was done.
You know, commonly, so. I know in the process of hiring people, sometimes they say you should speak to not only the references that the candidate suggests, but also second level references mm-hmm. and third level references their references refer to you as well.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I honestly, the last one, the one we have right now, we hired through an employment agency. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine owns one. It's the first time I've ever used it, and it's not cheap. However, they do a lot of that stuff I didn't have time for.
Right.
So it's working out really well so far.
Now, was that an administrative employee?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. So they found two that matched the profile really well, and the one wasn't necessarily what we were looking for, although qualified, and the second one was a pretty good match for us. So far, so good. It's really working out well.
Yeah.
That copacetic, you know, that culture and behavioral environment between everybody on the team is so important because we're not, you know, we're in it to primarily to help our clients and to make money. Of course, everybody wants to make, you know, as much as they can. But, you know, without a positive work environment, you know, and any toxicity is just going to harm everybody's income potential.
Everybody's production goes down.
Right. And we had a toxic environment there for a period of time with that other employee, and that just... it just brings everybody down.
Yeah. What's the cost of a bad hire, in your opinion?
Honestly, I don't look back on things like that because I don't want to know. Yeah. It was costly.
Yeah.
No question.
So it's probably worth the extra time to do the steps that are suggested.
Absolutely. Yeah. So good thing they have all those models in place now and we follow them to the letter.
Yeah. Tell me about compensation. Is when you hire an administrator, mm-hmm. You know, you have a relationship, obviously, with Keystone mm-hmm. Partners Group. What's your latitude there with respect to compensation with licensed or unlicensed people?
Totally. The latitude's all mine. I mean, we can hire who we want and pay them what we want to pay them, and we just try to follow the models. Now, with hiring an administrative person, you know, you're looking at the local market, what is a person that position and other similar type businesses and situations get paid, and we kind of work from that. And
yeah.
I'm big on incentive pay. So mm-hmm. the better people do, the more they're going to get, the type of bonuses they're going to get, whether it be monetary or, you know, like last year, our whole team got Surface, the little computer thing, Surfaces.
Oh, cool.
So they were really, really jazzed about that.
So the unlicensed people are salary, which you determine.
Right.
And bonuses that are your decision also.
Yep. Absolutely.
Okay. How about the licensed folks?
You know, we try to, I follow the models pretty mm-hmm. much. And, you know, there's, you have variations of the models. Gary Keller even says, you know, go with what works for you, mm-hmm. But try to follow them as best you can. And so we do, and the great thing about our culture is I have so many resources and people to talk to.
Yeah.
And so I just talked around and tried to find what I felt was the fairest and best way to handle it I'm an uncomplicated type of guy, so the simpler the better, as far as I'm concerned. So our compensation plans are pretty simple for our people, and they know what they need to do to reach certain levels, and everybody seems to be pretty happy with it.
That's excellent. Now, if I were a new agent and I were to come up to you and say, Jim, you know, I'm relatively new, but I'm thinking of hiring an administrator, what would be some of your advice to me in terms of when to do that?
I've actually had that question several times, and I've had lunch with people about it. They ask me, buy me lunch, and you're good. Yeah. feed me, and I'll give you all you need to know.
Hopefully, the people in our audience are having lunch right now, and they're getting this for free.
Yeah, exactly. What do I tell them? I try to tell them to follow the models, and you know, a lot of it's going with your gut. How do you envision this person fitting into the way you do things and the way they describe they like to do things? You know, and if it's for an administrator, you know, you want an organized person that likes to put their head down and make sure that desk is cleared off every day when they leave that office, unlike mine.
Right.
So, I'm really, what I'm looking for is pretty much the opposite of me. Somebody with very structured and in everything they do. I am not that way in the office. I'm a driver, and I want to get in there and do my work and don't want any of the complications of massive paperwork.
Yeah, which is kind of counterintuitive, I guess, to some people.
They it say, is. Yeah.
I want to hire somebody just like me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No. That's the worst mistake you can make.
The worst mistake.
Yeah. Because you're not. Then you're both in your strengths. You're both doing the same things. You're not working. You know, you want somebody with different strengths than you, so they complement one another.
In your opinion,
John Maxwell.
Yeah,
that's another book that I forgot to mention. Strength. Working your strengths. I don't know what the name of the book is. I forget.
Yeah,
you probably know it.
I can't remember offhand. You've got so many books.
Yeah, I've
read a lot of them.
I know, yeah.
But, when is the right time, though? I mean, when is the right time for an agent who's talented? When's the right time for them to hire help?
That's a very good question. And I never knew that answer until my current company. But general rule of thumb is 30 to 40 transactions a year. Till you are at the point where you're going to need to leverage with through people, or you need to start turning customers down. Because if you just accept everybody and keep doing everything yourself, your service is going to suffer to your clients. And it's going to take you a step back in the business. So if you want to grow your business and make it bigger, you need to leverage it through people, because you can only do so many things.
Right. Yeah. So you're leveraging yourself to provide a certain level of service.
Right. Absolutely.
So that you can do more transactions, but at the same time provide a customer experience that's going to generate referral business.
Right? Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Wow.
Yeah. And there are some clients that are just going to want to work with you. And sometimes, once in a while, you have that situation. I have a very high-end commercial investor that I pretty much deal with. That's my only really buyer that I deal with. We just have a great relationship, and it works very well. I've had very little issues with any of my 20-year clients going with my buyer agent, Mary Jo, because if you meet Mary Jo, you love Mary Jo, and you'll ditch me quick. And that's good, because she goes by our team standards, and it's really the standard that is what counts. You know,
that's a great subject.
Yes.
When you think about your clients and what you want your clients to think about you and your team, what do you want them to associate when they think about you? What characteristics for you and your team are important?
Just that they will be very well represented professionally. We are true advocates, whichever side we're on. The service and communication will be exactly what it was stated that it would be upon initial contact, and when they sign the contracts with us. And you know, by and large, by our testimonials that we receive and letters we receive and different things, we don't make 100% of the people happy. You know, there's always a few out there, but, you know, by and large, we're a pretty good percentage on that.
Well, yeah, because a lot of the the majority of your business comes from repeat business.
Right.
Which speaks for itself.
Yeah, repeat and referral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. The vast majority.
So on the inside of your team, mm-hmm. what kind of culture do you like to create on the inside of your team? How would your team members describe what it's like to work with the Jim Christman team?
Well, they know, the first thing they know is that the client comes first. Mm-hmm. And that is always the standard that they need to go by. Mm-hmm. And if they have a dicey situation, they need to talk to me first before they handle it. And
right.
Most of them don't need to. They know what the standard is. But mm-hmm. sometimes, there's complexities that come up. So that's first and foremost. And really, the next part is to follow the culture and have fun.
Yeah.
So
okay.
The more fun we have, the better we all do.
Do you have expectations of the folks on your team while they're having fun to perform at a certain level on an annual basis?
And, sure.
And what are your expectations of, say, buyer specialists that work on your team?
Well, the nice thing about it is, with the people I have now, their goals were as good or better than I anticipated them to have. So at the end, the yearly review, we give them a bunch of questions they need to write down the answers for. Mm-hmm. And, part of it is, how much do you want to make? And how many units do you want to sell? And what do you suggest changes that we make? Because I want their input on mm-hmm. things they think we could do better. So far I haven't had to correct them on expectations. They're mm-hmm. right in line with what I expected for myself. Mm-hmm. So, and we, this isn't a once a year type thing. We have a 411 meeting every Tuesday at 10:30.
411 being 4 weeks, 1 month, 1 year goals kind of all wrapped
right,
in.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And we stay focused on the task mm-hmm. at hand. We talk about buyers and sellers and properties we need to get rid of and that sell, and buyers we need to find a property for, but generally it's just staying on task.
Yeah. So when you have got good talent, you don't have to push them, they push you.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. Yeah.
What do they expect of you? Is there something that they've come to expect from your team?
I think they just expect leadership, mm-hmm. Direction as to, where we're going mm-hmm. and what the main goals are and what the focus is, which is always the client. Mm-hmm.
So in future, as your team continues to evolve and grow, where do you see your team going in terms of performance or expansion or where you'd like to be?
We try to stay on task with just having that 20% plus increase in production every year. And mm-hmm. ultimately, we're going to have to add more people. So whether it's probably going to include, more buyer agents showing assistance mm-hmm. and, somebody to help me on the listing side too.
Yeah.
Because, getting a little extra golf in wouldn't hurt.
Sure.
I don't get out there enough, and that's really what we try to stay focused on.
What would your role be in that when your business grows to its fruition?
I don't think I'll ever be out of it, mm-hmm. but a step back role just to oversee what's mm-hmm. going on and offer suggestions and meet with everybody.
Leadership.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's really about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just have fun.
Sure. And tell me about what you'd like to leave as a legacy for your family or community. What matters to you?
Well, one exciting thing we're doing as far as the community is we're involved in a new charity called the Carbon County Community Partnership, mm-hmm. CCCP. And it's basically a group of people that contribute to local causes. So, but everything goes in a fund, mm-hmm. And we're, the seed money is being doubled by a partnership in Lackawanna County, And we're trying to follow their model. They started a similar organization in the early 1990s mm-hmm. with $1,500, and that has grown to $3 million. Mm. And this is money that, and this is with them all through the time period, giving to local causes. Mm-hmm. Whether it even be sponsoring a team or building a recreation
whatever
center,
the need is.
Things like wherever the need is, it's things that we always would love to see happen, but can never fund ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just like-minded people getting together doing that. We're very excited about that project. So,
excellent.
So, and the great thing is, I mean, that's what they started with in 1994. We're starting with about $500,000
awesome.
as the beginning. So, it's a great way to kick it off. So,
yeah, that's exciting.
Yeah. And then family-wise, you know, my wife would say we just want to keep everybody on a good track.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we've got three boys and they're outstanding kids and very likable, very well adjusted. So we feel, you know, pretty proud about that.
Awesome.
And yeah, we've got one in college, still in college. One works with me, one's still in college, and one is a sophomore this year. Mm-hmm. So they're doing great.
That's awesome. So. Well, listen, one last thing.
Mm-hmm.
Final word to our audience members who are relatively new to real estate or in that place where they're doing 1, 2, 3 million in volume and they mm-hmm. want to grow. What are your recommendations that they focus on and never lose sight of?
Oh. Well, that's pretty simple. Focus on the clients that you have
mm-hmm.
and serve them well after the settlement.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to always be talking to people,
mm-hmm.
you know, prospecting new clients.
Right.
Okay. Eventually, there may come a point where they can dial that back quite a bit because, you know, the success will come and people will be referring you left and right and you'll have repeat customers that... you know, you don't have to hit it as hard,
mm-hmm.
but you know, in those early years, they got to stay at it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what I did, and really, I mean, honestly, I didn't have the gift of gab, and I was very green, and pretty unsuccessful for 3 years. So my success was that I actually stayed with it,
be
even
persistent.
Though I barely made any money. Yes, absolutely.
Words of wisdom to grow by.
Right, absolutely.
Jim, it has been my pleasure to have you on the show today.
Thank you.
And really, it's been a lot of fun.
Great.
And I know what you shared with our folks about your experiences, having been an owner of your own company and affiliated with other companies as well, is pretty powerful stuff. So I would like to certainly thank all of our viewers for being with us today. On behalf of myself and Keystone Partners Group, thank you for spending your time with us. And I welcome you back in futures as we dispel the myths and mysteries around success in the real estate industry.